You're listening to The Back 40, the podcast for Ontario farmers, covering topics and issues that matter most to Ontario agriculture. Brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm the host of The Back 40, Mike Brine, agribusiness specialist at Trillium Mutual Insurance. Since the start of the pandemic, we've heard a lot about direct-to-consumer sales from farms. Consumers are looking for a little more contact with where their food comes from. And of course, early on in the pandemic, we had some supply issues as well, that things were not maybe as readily available in the supermarkets. And people went looking for alternative places to find their food supply. Some farmers have gone this direction. They would have been going maybe to farmers markets, but have looked for a different way to be able to market their products because they haven't had that opportunity in the first part of the pandemic. On the other hand, there are farms that have been doing this for quite a while. I'm talking today with Emma Butler from J&E Meats. They are one farm that has been involved in the direct-to-consumer sales for a little while. Emma, welcome to the Back 40.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
So give us a little bit of an introduction to who Emma Butler is and who your family is, and then we'll dive into how your business operates.
So my name is Emma Butler. My husband's name is Josh. That is where the J in J&E Meats and the E comes from in our business name. We are located in Croton, Ontario, which is in Chatham, Kent, the northern part of Chatham, Kent County. Our farm has actually been in the Butler family since the 1930s when Josh's great-grandpa purchased the property here. My husband and his siblings were born and raised on this very farm, in this very house. And his father, Harold, was also born and raised here with his siblings. So we are proudly a third generation farm. And then Josh and I actually have three children ourselves. So they are the fourth generation of Butlers to live and work on this farm.
That's awesome. You have a farming operation there that wasn't always direct sales. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is that you raise and why did you go to direct sales?
Our farming operation is fairly diverse. We don't have any employees on our farm. It's just myself, Josh, and his father and his mother. We work here full time, the four of us. We have cash crop. That's sort of one tier of our operation. So we grow the big three down here in southwestern Ontario, which is corn, wheat, soybeans. And then because we have the livestock aspect as well, we do grow all of our own hay. We do cover crops, all of that good kind of stuff. And then the livestock portion to our operation, we have birth to table beef. We do the direct sale to consumer of our products. We have cow-calf operation. And then we also finished cattle, and we do sell those, not as much now that we are doing direct to sales, but we do sell those in larger markets to the larger processors to be processed. That those would be the animals that would show up in restaurants and in the grocery store. But direct to consumer, we do our beef, and then my husband and I also have a sheep operation as well too. So we have about 140 ewes, and we are actually accelerating our lambing program, so we will be over 200 lambing ewes here in 2021. So we're sort of growing in all aspects of our operation, and we're diverse and multi-tiered, and everything sort of correlates together.
So tell us a story about how you got started with the direct consumer then.
It was completely by accident. I think that's how every stroke of genius happens. One night, my husband and I, back in 2018, we were just sort of talking about agriculture in general, some frustrations we had as producers with the disconnect of us being producers and consumers as well. We felt that we had a disconnect between our food and where it comes from. So we knew that our community must be feeling this disconnect as well. And we sort of just come up with the idea of, well, we should just start selling to them. Let's try it. Let's see where it goes. After just a quick conversation, and I whipped up a logo and made a Facebook page, all of a sudden J&E Meats was born overnight. We started advertising only on social media. So we had our Facebook page. We didn't even have Instagram for a little while. And we just kind of put it out there that, hey, we have freezer beef for sale. Come try us out. And within 4 months of launching our Facebook page, we were constructing our on-farm store. So it very much, we hit just like a niche market at the right time in our community, something that our area really needed. There's not a lot of livestock producers in our area, and there's certainly little to no direct sale livestock producers in our area. So our community just really supported us right from day one, and it took right off.
So you started out online. You now have a store on farm. What other sort of changes did you have to make to the operation in order to make this successful?
We started just online, operating on Facebook. We sold out of our home for a little while, and then we decided to build our on-farm store. So we started in late 2018, and then by summer 2019, we were cutting the ribbon on our farm store. And some adjustments that we've had to make, we've really had to manage our own time, obviously, you know, with the farm and everything that we have going on. We have small children as well, too. So time management has been something that we've really had to kind of work on and work with our customers and what their needs are as well. Leading back to our livestock operation, because J&E Meats took off so well right off the bat, we really had to get down to the nitty-gritty and look at our operation and look at our cow-calf and what our production was and look at our sheep flock and decide right then and there how we were going to make moves to have that production that was going to meet our consumer demand. Because as I'm sure you're aware, maybe the listeners are aware, you can't grow a beef animal overnight. You know, it's 18 months to 2 years to grow that animal to finish. We really had to start making moves back then in 2018, early 2019, to even meet where we are now here in 2021. So we really took a risk in our livestock operation wise to just go for it and to just try it. And we used to do direct sales just sort of with the chicken in small batches. And then we started doing more and increasing more. So we've kind of went out on a limb in that way as well, too, to have chicken to offer our customers. It's really important to us to do as much here ourselves that we can for quality assurance purposes. We know everything about them. So for us, that makes most sense to us to do as much here as we can, the beef, the lamb, the chicken, our farm fresh eggs. But overnight, we kind of had to make the commitment of, yes, we're going to do this and we're going to go all in and make those decisions and make those moves so that long term, here we are 2-3 years later, we're seeing those decisions really, really pan out.
So you started, you said, with a Facebook page and Instagram. Who did you end up with for customers? Was it your target market that you thought initially you were going to get, or who did you end up with?
I was completely floored with using social media only. I thought that I was going to be selling to myself. That is who I kind of thought. So I'm 28 years old. My husband is in his 30s. I thought a young family like ours was who we were going to be going after. We're on social media. We thought that's where we were going. And then once we opened the doors of our store, we were very shocked to see the demographic coming through our doors. Our demographic is actually 55 plus, older millennials and boomers and that generation. Our parents' age is who our target market has now become. Those are the customers that we find coming through our door the most. And then they are telling their children, who are my age, about it. And then their children are starting to come. But initially, we thought it was going to be sort of the other way around. It was a pleasant surprise. I'm so happy to be able to connect with them and learn from them. And they're just a wealth of knowledge. They tell me what I want to hear, but they also give me really good feedback. They tell me what they want in terms of cuts and quantity. And I ask them about store hours. They're super welcoming and they're very devoted. We've seen some of the same customers now over and over for the past 3.5 years. They've stuck with us since day one. And yeah, it was just a very pleasant surprise to see that that's our target demographic, because it was definitely not who I was expecting.
So you went after people like yourself and you ended up with people like me.
I got their moms and dads. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that makes me feel so much better.
It was a shock, but it was so, like I said, it was so pleasant because it's kind of come full circle. Because yes, I went initially out into the world thinking that I was selling to myself and to my demographic. And then here is this generation of people that are just older than I am coming through our doors and supporting us and dedicated and everything else. And then now they're, like I said, they're bringing their children or they're buying our products to give to their children, to give to their grandchildren. You know, I have some that gift quarter or half beef to their kids for Christmas, and that's like what they do for them. So it's a really interesting demographic that, yes, I didn't see that one coming.
So do you sell by the individual cut, or do you just sell quarters or halves of animals, or how does that work?
So initially, and I'm sure every other livestock producer can level with me on this, initially for years and years, the Butler family, they would sell freezer beef. So half, quarter beef to the neighbors, right? You know, someone would come knocking on their door and they'd be like, yeah, sure, we'll sell you a quarter. I think that that's kind of, again, leading into that demographic of the 55 plus, that's what a lot of them were used to doing or were raised on. So we were really no stranger in terms of that, selling those bulk orders. When we opened our farm store, we right off the gate started selling individual cuts. So we sell, you know, one steak per package, one, you know, 3 to 4 pound roast, one package of ground beef, very similar to that at the grocery store, because that is traditionally what consumers are used to. If they're going to go and try something new, you know, you kind of do have to reflect what they're used to seeing. They're used to going to the grocery store, seeing the products lit up, being able to look at them and then make their purchasing decision from there. So that's kind of a little bit what we replicated in our store. But then we also subsequently did offer and do still offer half whole and quarter beef, as well as half and whole lamb in addition.
Do you have difficulty when you're selling individual cuts? Do you have difficulty getting rid of the whole animal, or do you find that certain cuts go really well and other ones are difficult to move?
Absolutely. So we very much live in a steak nation. It is what it is. You know, we live in this world where I see lots of new consumers come through my door and they're like, oh, I want a ribeye, or I want 15 ribeyes, or I want 20 T-bones, not realizing that, yes, that's probably going to wipe me out of my inventory, which is fine. You know, I've always got more coming. However, there is an entire animal surrounding that T-bone. So one of our biggest sort of, I guess, hurdles that we've had to jump over and things that we've had to work on with our own customers is that there is more to the animal than just a steak, or there's more to the animal than just ground beef. And as I've been supplying customers with bulk orders, I sort of refer to them as, so the wholes and the halves and the quarters, I've really had to become a teacher of sorts, because a lot of people have never filled their freezers in that manner before. And I do get the comment like, well, I don't want any roasts, I want all steaks. Well, that doesn't necessarily happen. You're taking an entire part of an animal. You know, I've really had to become this educator that I didn't think was going to happen, because myself, I was born and raised on a beef farm. So I'm very well versed in the cattle industry. I'm very well versed in agriculture. And I was maybe a little bit naive. I thought everybody had a more general knowledge, but I quickly realized that people don't know anything. And I'm not saying that in a rude way, but they don't know anything. They have no idea, like, oh, why can't I get 40 ribeyes? I'm like, what about the rest of the animal? What about the roast? What about the ground? What about, you know, eating more nose to tail, being more conscious of what actually is produced by an animal? A beef animal is not made up of ribeye steaks. So having that conversation with my customers, and even on our social media, trying to put that out there more of the importance of, look, every part of this animal from, you know, head to hoof is good. There's no part of this animal that is garbage. And even sending them cooking ideas and recipes and meal cards and things like that to try and help them eat more broad and eat more a range of cuts. I just want them to eat more consciously. And that's what it's all about. You know, you're buying direct from the farmer for a reason. So I want to be able to provide my customers with that information of, yes, how it was born and raised. Yes, its date of birth, if you want to know it. Yes, I can tell you when it was harvested, how it was packaged, what it ate. But I also want you to consume the whole thing. That's sort of just where I come from. And that's the narrative that I really like to share with our consumers as well. And then leading back into, is it hard to move certain cuts and others? It's definitely seasonal, leading into that Steak Nation. You know, right now we're coming off the summer. So this summer I've sold obviously a lot of steaks, a lot of burgers, etc. But now here going to lead into, you know, the new school year, we'll put it that way. I will predict that I'll start moving a lot more roasts and ground beef and things like that. So it's definitely like an ebb and flow of what moves and kind of what doesn't. But overall picture, I am trying to move the entire animal.
I think that a lot of people don't realize that I certainly enjoy a good steak, but as you say, there's other parts of the animal. You simply have to cook them in different manners. Some of them you can't just throw them on the barbecue and cook them. Some of them have to be slow cooked. Some of them have to have a marinade. Some of them have to have some other types of recipes there. I grew up where we used to get half beef, so I'm well aware that it doesn't all come in steaks.
Well, that's just it. And then, you know, just kind of building a more conscious consumer is something that I really want to strive for, because I have complete confidence in my consumers. I know they're smart. I know they've done their research. I know that the reason why they are shopping with me is because I fulfill all of their needs, fulfill that narrative of the warm and fluffy and like it's coming from a farm and I can meet the farmer. But then I also fulfill their needs if they want a good product at the end of the day, you know, like that's what keeps them coming back through my doors and keeps them in conversation with me is that I have a good product and my product speaks for itself. So that's kind of part of that narrative of just eating more consciously is that, you know, my cross-cut rib roast is just as delicious and tender and amazing as my filet mignon.
Right. And it's just cut from a different part of the animal and you have to treat it differently when you're trying to cook it.
Exactly. And even to that note too, I find a lot of people, you know, are sort of caught up in this, I don't really want to call it a fast food nation, but they're doing a lot of meal prepping and meal planning, which is absolutely amazing. But they sometimes get stuck in that rut of just convenience. So, you know, maybe, yeah, they're always just eating chicken breast because it's convenient and they know how to cook a chicken breast. But if you take an extra 10 or 15 minutes, you can have a really awesome rump roast. There's different ways that you can make your meat taste different according to your palate while still eating consciously, while still eating healthy. That's really what it's all about.
Do you like what you're hearing from the Back 40? We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email with your comments and thoughts to theback40@trilliummutual.com or follow us on social media at Trillium Mutual. So when the pandemic hit, what changed for you?
Oh, the P word. So interesting. Everything I would say changed for us. Our business grew tenfold in the snap of a finger, something that I really could not have predicted. One of the issues that we faced was all of a sudden we have this massive surge in demand, which is awesome, which left me standing at the doors of my store with my arms wide open, welcoming everybody in. It sort of domino affected, okay, I have this really giant surge in demand, which is amazing, which is perfect, but I have to have these cuts available to serve this giant demand that all of a sudden I have, which dominoes into, I didn't have the space booked to the abattoir. So, you know, now I have this pen of cattle that is ready to go to serve this giant demand, but there's this gap of, I can't get them processed fast enough and I can't get them back here and into the hands of my customers fast enough, which I think this has always been an issue in Ontario, that there's always been this sort of bottleneck of producers producing this really high quality product and there's, you know, hundreds of animals ready to go. And then above that, there is this giant mass of consumers that are pushing this demand. And then the bottleneck kind of comes to this middle part between the two where it's, we have a lack of processors, we have a lack of butchers, you know, their infrastructure is crumbling, like they weren't set up, they're not ready to feed this demand, so to speak. So when COVID happened, it was the best thing that's ever happened for our business, but it's also really reared the head of challenges that we knew in the background we were always facing, but now it's definitely brought them to the surface.
So when we go back to whatever passes for a semblance of normal, what changes back to what it was before and what stays the same?
Our new thing in January 2020 was I was launching a website. Go figure, I was super stubborn and I was holding off for the longest time because I know from my past job experience, I used to work for John Deere. So I know in my past experience with that, I know how hard managing a website is. I know how much work it is and all the trials and tribulations that came with it. So I really put that off. So then come January 2020, our farm store had been open for 6 to 8 months. And I thought that's going to be our new thing for 2020. We're going to launch a website in January and we're going to start doing online sales, which was a big step for our business because it's another avenue to get our product out there. It's another workload. And then it's allocating inventory accordingly. You know, I had to make sure that I had inventory for my storefront, but then also inventory for my online sales, et cetera. So I launched that in January 2020 and then flash forward to March when everything went down, we'll call it. I was not ready to process online sales. I hadn't really made it that clear that I was taking online sales, but then all of a sudden the entire world flipped to doing online sales. So then for myself as a small business, I was trying to catch up and I learned very, very quickly how to process online sales, how to allocate inventory. And then we did contactless pickup. Here we are in mid to late 2021. What stays the same for us? We're going to continue to operate our on-farm store at the capacity that we know that we can handle it. And then our online sales, because now customers are very versed in ordering online, or I find that they'll look online on our website if they haven't been here before to see what we have. And then they come into my store and they realize quickly that I have a lot more in store than I do online. But that's what I think is going to stay true, is that trend of shopping online, ordering online, or even just viewing online. Like, the online sort of virtual world is much more bopping than it initially was in 2018. You know, when we started our business, it's really jumped and grown in leaps and bounds, and consumers have really learned a lot. So for myself as a small business, maintaining my online presence as well as my physical presence is kind of been the balance. But I think going forward that's going to stay true. It seems like that's where consumerism is sort of going.
Sounds like you've got a lot on the go here. What are your store hours for people to come in and buy from you?
So prior to the pandemic, we were open Saturdays and Fridays. Then when the pandemic hit, we actually closed our store because, again, nobody knew what was going on. And then I also sneakily was pregnant and I didn't tell anyone. So we kind of took that a little bit as our scapegoat of like, perfect, now I can go off and have my baby and mind my own business and manage our store and our business online. And then when we're ready, we will reopen. So we went ahead and did that. And then we reopened in August, actually, of 2020. So we were closed from spring to late summer of 2020. And then we only opened one day after that, because that was really all I can manage just personally for our family and our farm. That's all I could manage. But then also kind of fell back to inventory management. Inventory management has been my biggest challenge. There was a few times where I felt bad because we kind of had empty shelves in our store. So flashing forward this summer, we decided to reopen another day. It's another opportunity for customers to come out and shop. It's also an additional opportunity for those that place online orders with me to come and pick up their orders if they want. I'm sure our customers would love it if we could be open 7 days a week, but that's just not realistic. And at the end of the day, we're a small business and we are a family, and we have to do what's best for us, not what's best for everyone.
So when you're moving product, how much of your product would you move through your store? How much would go from the online sales, and how much would go for people that are interested in a quarter or a half beef?
I find that summertime, I'm the busiest for my half, whole, and quarter beef, slower in my store and busy again online. And then come the winter, fall season, I find my store is extremely busy. My online sales are kind of tapered off, which I find is more so because customers are coming into my store. So they're not maybe doing as much online in the convenience. They're actually making the trip out. And I find my half and whole and quarter beef sales, they kind of ebb and flow in the wintertime as well too. But I definitely would say that they're much more clustered in the summertime. So it's just really interesting to see the consumer patterns and how they've played out. And then for our lamb as well, we've really been working hard in this corner of Ontario to push Ontario lamb and to get the product into people's hands and to get people to try it. And that has also really, really taken off for us as well.
So do you carry anything in your store or on your online store other than what you produce on your own farm?
So 90% of what I have in my farm store is born and raised on our farm. So our chicken, we get them as day olds, raise them. The beef is all born and raised on the farm. The lamb is all born and raised on the farm. I have laying hens. I just recently this year have brought in pork, and I bought it from another small producer in our area, mostly for my customers, because the pork industry, anybody that's listening that does pork, I mean, we all know it is up and down and absolutely all over the place. And then myself, we've raised pigs before. My husband's late brother, he actually started into the pigs 17, 18 years ago. And then when he passed, they had to sort of decide to get out of them. So we've been in the pig game. We know what it's like. We know how hard it is. So we have brought that in just recently to give another element, another variety to our customers. But everything else is all 100% from here. I don't need another project. I am at my cap for projects right now. So I'm not about to go raising pigs just to have them in our store. I'm fully comfortable sourcing from another local producer. It's still the same narrative of, I know where they came from, I know who raised it, all that kind of stuff, but they're set up and that's what they do. We don't want to get to the point in our business where we're stretching ourselves too thin, because we never want our quality to go down. So we still want to always be producing the highest quality products that we can. So I'm very happy to outsource that, to bring it in, to have it in our store for our customers without having to do that aspect myself.
So if you had to do this all over again, are there things that you would do differently?
Absolutely. I've been doing this a while. I've made a lot of mistakes. So if you have questions, please ask me and I will tell you what not to do. There are absolutely things that I would do differently. One of them, and this is sort of like a chief little nugget of information that I give, please don't build a store first. Don't be converting your garage. Don't be getting freezers. Just stop yourself before you get too far ahead of this thing. Because what I've learned from small business is your business is like having your son or daughter at university, right? Like you very much have to fund this thing. You have to support it emotionally, but you also have to let it grow and do its own thing. Like you should not be paying out of your pocket consistently for your business. At some point, your business needs to be covering all of the debts and the expenses. I would very strongly recommend really get your clients and build your presence online first before you jump into this store thing, because the store thing is nothing but overhead expenses.
Slightly different business model before you walk, before you run.
Exactly. And I did not do that. I definitely jumped from like stepping stone to stepping stone, and I've really been able to save myself. But there are other people I know that maybe aren't in that situation. So when they ask me, you know, oh, I'm thinking of doing a farm store, what is your recommendation? I'm like, do you have a website? Do you have a Facebook with like over 1,000 people on it? Do you have an Instagram with at least 1,200 people on it? You know, how are you going to get your product out there? What's your target market? How are you going to pay for this thing? Like, number one, how are you going to pay for this thing? Because something I think a lot of people don't realize is when you go to a, say you go to just a small, so you go to a tea shop, right? And you see all the teas lined up on the wall. That tea shop has bought those teas to sell it. So that you're looking at thousands of dollars in inventory. So if you want to have your little farm store, that's awesome. I'm totally there for you. Like rah, 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 rally, let's do it. But do you have a couple thousand dollars to fill your shelves with jams and jellies and pickles? And do you have the funds there to be able to have meat on your shelf? Do you have $1,000 sitting around to buy some freezers? Is your business going to be able to cover the expenses, you know, the hydro, the insurance, the internet that it's going to take to run your point of sale system? You know, like there's so many more things that come with it than I want to start a farm store and I want to work from home. Again, I'm all about that, but I always kind of tell everybody, please put some serious guts behind this, because you have to make it go. And if you want this to be your full-time thing, you have to give it your full focus. You need to make sure that you're going to be able to make it go.
So what's in the future for J&E Meats?
So I have a lot of hopes and dreams, as I think does every entrepreneur. So for us, actually, we're expanding a little bit into skincare. Which like drop the bomb, what? We're expanding into skincare. And the reason why, if you're thinking that doesn't make any sense, I'll tell you, it's because we want to be a little bit more conscious of using nose to tail and using more of our animal. So right now what we're doing is we're taking our beef tallow and we're turning it into all natural skincare products. So I'm working with somebody that she is absolutely phenomenal. She's been in the beauty industry for 15 years. She makes all of our skincare products for us. She's licensed. She's legit. It's not me in my kitchen cooking up this skincare. But I take her the piece of tallow and she renders it and she turns them into these beautiful products that are all natural that feed your skin. Myself, I love using all natural skincare products. So for us, kind of adding that to our lineup and to be able to have a shippable product and to be able to have a product that doesn't have an expiration date or that doesn't need to be frozen. This is sort of an experiment in all the things. We're trying it out. We're seeing how it goes. I've been using these products myself for the past 4 months because I'm not going to put anything out there in the universe that I don't absolutely love. And then long term, our goals are to keep on trucking, literally just to keep doing what we're doing right now. We want to build a bigger store. We eventually would love to have our own butcher shop and be able to have control of aging and cutting and wrapping our own products. And we're definitely on track to do so.
So what would you say is the best part about this business model? And what might be the worst?
I have an answer to this that answers both best and worst. So I would say building relationships with your processor and the consumer, and get into shipping, building relationships with Canpar and Care to Post and all those other avenues, because one of the things that makes building relationships the best thing and the worst thing is it's hard to build relationships sometimes, especially even in the abattoir world. A lot of people have been going to the same abattoirs for a long time. So if you're looking to do a business model like this and you aren't currently in goods with your local processor, your local butcher, you know, now's the time to start building those relationships, because, you know, those are the people that you rely on to get your product out there. Unfortunately, as of recently, social media has really, really changed their policies and their guidelines and their community guidelines a lot. Anybody that has an animal-based product, whether it's meat, whether it's wool, whether it's tallow, who knows, has been getting suppressed by the algorithm, which doesn't seem like it's a big issue, but it is. When all you do is advertise on social media, if our posts are not getting the traction and if they're not getting in front of all of our people that like our page, we have to find other avenues to do that. So in building relationship, I've turned against social media and I've been focusing a lot more on our emailing list, which is another direct to consumer. It pops right into your mailbox. They're people that shop from us already. They're people that actually care about us, that come into my store, that see me. So I've been building more relationships through my email list and sharing a lot more through my email list, because that's something that I control and something that I own. So I'm not relying on my relationship with the big social media monster, because that relationship is very quickly getting broken and I am getting the short end of that stick. Building relationships too kind of leads back with the processor. You know, we process every Monday. We do 2 or 3 beef every single week. Lambs have been an issue this year getting them in to be processed. So we've had to build relationships with new processors that we've never worked with before. That is what my answer would be, is that this business model, building relationships, is the best thing, because that is what, you know, ultimately determines the success of your business. But it's also the worst thing, because you really have to go out on a limb and then you have to reshare your story and you have to really put yourself out there and be vulnerable. So if you're not necessarily comfortable doing that, then you have to figure out ways that you can present that information to help build those relationships that you ultimately need, because I would be nothing without my customers and I would not have a business without them, but I need those tools and resources to be able to get the products into their hands.
So if people want to get a hold of you and people want to buy some meat from J&E Meats, how do they do that?
So it's really easy. I'm super accessible. You can Google J&E Meats. All of my information will pop right up. You can see our 5-star Google rating and all of our reviews right on there. You can always find me on Facebook at J&E Meats, on Instagram at J&E Meats. And we're also at Camden Tallow, CamdenTallow on Instagram as well too. That is where you'll find all of our information on our new skincare line. You can also find us at janiemeats.com, or our farm store is open on Fridays and Saturdays. All of our information can be found on our website as well too. And we're located at 12280 Croton Line. We're in Northern Chatham Kent between Dresden and Thamesville.
That's awesome. We've been speaking with Emma Butler from J&E Meats about the direct-to-consumer sales.
Join us next time when our guest will be Anne Wasco. Anne is the chair of the Canadian Roundtable for Sustainable Beef, and we'll be talking about what the beef industry is doing to reduce emissions and become more sustainable in the production of beef in Canada. That's next time on The Back 40.
Emma, thanks very much for being on The Back 40.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
You've been listening to The Back 40, brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance. Be sure to subscribe to The Back 40 wherever you find your favorite podcasts so that you don't miss an episode. The Back 40, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm Mike Brine. Until next time, take care and stay safe.